is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, June 19, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. Now, I got this Bleacher tweet from a listener, the starting block, and he writes, I understand why I've discussed it at length the last few months, but it has become predominantly the labor negotiations podcast as opposed to a Baseball Tonight pod. A distraction of a week of nothing but baseball talk with guests would be a great show. And so, I got this and I was thinking about it. And I feel like, Taylor, it'd be great to bring the listeners behind the curtain about how we've been dealing with all this. Yeah, would you agree? Let's go over that.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously at the beginning of all this, we wanted to provide a distraction. We were still committed to doing the pod 5 days a week, but the starting block is right. The last couple of weeks, we've really devolved into the back and forth of the labor negotiations. And honestly, we're going to probably play the podcast, like the negotiations. It's sort of a day-to-day thing. We're hoping that we might get an agreement this weekend. It sounds like it's trending in some sort of direction, at least away from the doldrums of April and May. But I think we got to, starting next week, we're going to have to start playing it by ear. And, when we do show up, hopefully we can bring you some more baseball fun. But that's just kind of where we're at. And that's a reflection on the state of the game, honestly.
Yeah, and starting block, when we started this, I felt it was important. Taylor felt it was important. Like, people do not want to hear day after day after day about what might be, about the negotiations, about coronavirus, which is why for 2.5 months, we went heavy into the storytelling, bringing on great guests like Dave Roberts and Aaron Boone, David Wells, the Hall of Fame week that we had on, the general manager week we had on, so that we could tell baseball stories and focus on that. And then in the last couple of weeks, as we thought we were getting closer to a deal, we talked more about the labor situation. As Taylor said, I think that we will get a deal because they're close, but who knows with these two sides? It's crazy how they can't work together. And as Taylor said, we will adjust accordingly. If there's not a deal in the next few days, then we probably will begin to cut back on the number of podcasts as we wait until we actually get some real baseball, and we'll get back to the storytelling when we do have podcasts. Today, we'll take a little bit of a break from the latest labor machinations. We'll talk some about it with Jesse Rogers, but we also have a fun conversation with a Rays' Tyler Glasnow about how long he needs to get back to game speed and how he views Tampa Bay's chances for winning a short season. We'll have Todd Radom's weekly quiz and an examination of Wrigley Field. As we go to that, here's some notes. Albert Pujols is giving back to his team in his native Dominican Republic. According to the Los Angeles Times, the veteran slugger is covering $180,000 in salary lost by staff members of the team in the Dominican who were furloughed because of the coronavirus pandemic. To review, Artie Moreno, the owner of the Angels, is worth billions with an S of dollars. And it's Albert Pujols who's stepping up to pay the salaries of these folks down in the Dominican Republic. So a tip of the cap to Albert Pujols for doing that. Yesterday, the back and forth between the two sides, Major League Baseball and the Players Association, continued. The Players Association countering with a proposal to Major League Baseball's proposal of 60 games. The players suggesting a 70-game season from July 19th through September 30th, full prorated pay, which I think is going to be the case no matter how many games are played. Spring training to begin June 26th. That's a week from today. And expanded playoffs to 16 teams in 2020 and 2021. But the back and forth continues. The two sides aren't really far apart when you look at the math, but they really are far apart because they can't agree on anything. I said on SportsCenter last night, they don't need a negotiator. They need a marriage counselor. Rob Manfred told reporters, this needs to be over until I speak with owners. I can't give you a firm deadline. Tony Clark said in his statement, after what Rob said to reporters, it is unequivocally false to suggest that any tentative agreement or other agreement was reached in that meeting. So on and on it goes. Jesse Rogers covers baseball for ESPN. He's done a great job covering these negotiations, Jesse. And I said off the top that I really feel like that they don't need a negotiator anymore. They just need a marriage counselor. I feel like that the two sides are working in the same ballpark in terms of what they're talking about. When you look at the big picture money-wise, they should be able to push it across, but my goodness, every day it feels like another layer of dysfunction in this working relationship.
I've never seen anything like it, and I know that can be hyperbolic, but it's not. I've never seen anything like it. The dueling statements that continue to come out, it's just insane. It really is. The other day, 2 days ago, when Rob Manfred put out his statement, not a joint statement between him and Clark, but his statement saying they had a framework for an agreement, as that statement's being released, I'm hearing from players, what is he talking about? We're not going to agree to 60 games. That was a proposal, not an agreement. I mean, even as one side's saying one thing, the other side simultaneously is saying something else. Sometimes it's publicly, sometimes it's privately. It's incredible. Now, I do think we're finally in the zone. I think the last 24 hours, the owners wanted to get some things off their chest. They were really upset that the players came back and said 70. But I think we're finally in that zone where the anger is going to at least subside for one moment, and they're going to find that middle ground. I could be completely wrong. I'm being hopeful. But last thing, Buster, remember, either way, the owners have won. The owners always win. 65 games is not what anybody wanted, and obviously the players at the top of that list. 65 is a complete compromise, mostly in favor of the owners. Players wanted 80, 90. The calendar said we could play 80 or 90 if they had gotten this done a month ago. So remember, it's still a win in the big sense for the owners.
Jesse, I would totally disagree with you. I think it's a loss for them all. Like, I think the way this is played out has been so embarrassing that there inevitably is going to be damage to the sport. We won't really know for a couple of years how that manifested. And you're right in terms of maybe spending the lump of money that they want to. Maybe the owners eventually get where they get to. I wanted to hear your take on whether or not you think there'll be a sweet spot at 65 or 66 games as they haggle over these last terms. But it's just a loss for everybody.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously that is true. I had an executive tell me a month ago, Buster, everybody needs to, and obviously the media couldn't do this, everybody needs to just not turn on MLB Network or Sports Center when baseball news comes up. Just ignore it. And a month from now, we'll have a deal and you'll go watch baseball. But instead, we've all had to drag ourselves through the mud to get to this point where they're 10 games apart. So, yes, of course, you're right about that. There are no real winners in this thing. But I still think the owners end up, at least in the debate, in the negotiation, getting closer to what they wanted.
Do you think it's going to be 65, 66? I mean, it seems to be an easy middle ground to find.
Yeah, I'm going to pick a weird number. I think it's going to be 64, actually. I'm going to say 64. Works out schedule-wise. So, yeah, it has to be. It has to be. And you saw this with Manfred making the rounds a little bit to some media members, kind of saying publicly and privately, we just need to get this done. We need to get this over. And if 4, 5, 6 games does it, then it'll be done. And I think today's the day, at the latest this weekend, absolutely this thing ends one way or another by Sunday, if not tomorrow.
And we'll be playing Hallelujah when that happens. And we'll probably be calling you for the podcast next week, Jesse. Thanks for doing this.
You got it, Buster. Be well.
Tyler Glasnow pitches for the Tampa Bay Rays when there is baseball. And Tyler, it looks like we might have some baseball. Tell me, first off, how you follow the news. What's your process for following the news on what's been going on?
So I don't have a Twitter or an Instagram, so it's a little difficult. Most of my information, you can still kind of go on Twitter and kind of get the gist of it. I'm in communication, obviously, with players, and I'm the player rep, so I have, like, the union calls and whatnot. But you know who actually gives some pretty good information is good old Donna Glasnow. I'm back home with my mom and dad, so she's on her phone, like, 24-7 looking at all the updates. So she's, like, my news source, basically.
Is that right? Your mama just she'll like, hey, this just happened or this just happened.
Yeah, like every 5 seconds I get a new article and I'm like, Mom, I think I got the gist of it. You don't have to keep on. It's nice though, get all the information. But I mean, I think especially how nowadays it's so easy and like information so widespread. I think just from players and the union and then mixed in with Twitter and stuff, it's pretty easy to stay in the loop. But yeah, hopefully we can figure something out soon, man.
Now, I've had players tell me through the years that a lot of times they just don't believe what's out there. They kind of want to wait for the final thing. What about for you?
I think depending on, like, I have, like, I don't know, I guess three sources, right? I can go on Twitter and some other people and then like some reporters and whatnot on Twitter. But I trust it, I guess. I think you can kind of sift through what's not real from like having judgment, and then like getting the information and then following up with like your other sources is, I've gotten a lot of good information off of Twitter, though. It's kind of strange to where like so many more people know about what's going on than like a lot of the players and like the union. I just think there's so many people involved that like things get leaked. And then, so I don't know, I'm kind of in the boat of just getting as much information as possible, then sifting through it and finding out what's real.
Yeah, it's interesting. During the process, I've had players reach out to me and staffers at the team level reach out and like, you know, compare notes and like, hey, what do you hear?
Yeah.
Because they're just trying to get as much information as possible. I got to say, I mean, no, I got to know you a little bit, and I'm, it surprised me to hear you say you're not on Twitter, because like your personality is perfect for social media.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I think so much of it is like, anytime you say something without context, it can get a little tricky, I guess. I was probably more active on Instagram. I think for me, as woo as it sounds, I really enjoy like kind of just connecting on like a normal person level. Not that people who have Twitter are not normal people. I just think like I like having the like human interaction, I guess. And I think so much of in season, you can get lost in a lot of the opinions on Twitter, and you're almost like a slave to the negative and the positive. So for me, more so, it's like a challenge over anything. I like to just kind of live in the moment, as like woo-woo as that sounds. But I like kind of not being attached to the internet all the time. And I think so much of it was like, not an addiction, but I think whenever you have a moment of like boredness or silence, you just tend to go look at your phone. And I was just over it. I just wanted to be able to play baseball and like live my life outside of baseball. So I think just not having social media makes it a little easier for me, but to each his own, like everyone can do what they want. I just think for me personally, I enjoy it kind of like this. It makes things a little less noisy.
How do you feel about how the negotiations have played out?
Well, it's been relatively frustrating, I'd say. I don't think people are inherently like trying to make it a problem. I think the owners think they're in the right and the players think that they're in the right. I think it's just trying to find that medium ground. I think there's been a lot of turmoil. I don't know. There's been a lot of stuff throughout the years between players and owners. So I think a lot of it's just being aired out right now. I don't know. I really do. I hope we get to an agreement. I think so much of this is a negotiation stance on both sides. And it's unfortunate that so much of it is being aired out on social media. And it's such a turnoff for fans. And I think both sides could probably, if they were to go back in time, could probably change a few things. I think like all the leaks and everything, like if we were to handle this internally, I think it would have been a lot smoother of a process. But like I said, I just hope we can come to an agreement at some point and we can play baseball, because not playing a season just seems ridiculous. And I hope that everyone can kind of get on the same page here soon.
What have you seen as someone who's played for a long time in terms of players coming together in recent weeks, which has become clear as a factor in this whole conversation?
Yeah, I think there was probably some doubt on the other side that we were all unified. And I think if there is a positive to draw from the situation, it's that all of us are very much on the same page. I've had to go on all the rep calls, and every time we do make a decision, everybody's on the same exact page. Like, it's a pretty open dialogue. Guys are willing to speak up, but we are definitely a lot more unified than we ever have been. So, like I said, if there is a positive to draw from it, that is definitely one of the things.
How weird has this whole time been for you, being away from baseball in the spring and in the early summer?
It's strange, man. It's like I haven't had a summer since I was in like the seventh grade. So it's obviously like a little different, because you can't do as much as you'd want. And I think it's important to kind of keep your distance. But as far as training and stuff goes, I'm in Arizona and a lot of the places are open. So I'm not really good at kind of sitting and doing nothing. So it's been pretty easy for me to go out and throw, and I've been throwing some live innings, and I've been like lifting and working out a bunch. So I think for me, my mentality has been that we are going to start up eventually. And as a professional athlete, my only responsibility right now is to like try and stay in good shape. So I just kind of wake up and do my workouts and take care of what I need to take care of. And then the rest of the day is just kind of like finding things to do.
What's the nature of the contact that you've had with the Rays as this has been going down and the coaches there?
I've talked to pretty much everybody. If anything, it's just kind of talking to catch up. No one's really trying to get like information or anything. I think everyone's curious and everyone wants to know what's going on. I think being the player rep, but they respect the fact that there's still just negotiations going on. But I'll talk to Kevin and I'll talk to like Motor, the hitting coach, and Kyle Snyder, obviously the pitching coach, a pretty good amount. I'd say we're all like relatively close to, and we're all friends. So much of it is just kind of like checking up on one another. And a lot of guys are in Florida right now starting to work out at the drop. So hopefully I can kind of make it over there soon.
And how much of that is the workouts that you're doing are structured through the team? You know, I remember writing a story early in the process and talking with folks at the team level, and it sounded like it was very regimented, like the way some teams were tracking what the players are doing on a daily basis, because no one's really known, okay, when's it going to restart, and they want to make sure that players are going to be in a good place.
I think for the Rays, we have very much been like kind of on your own. Not to say that we don't have something structured. Like, we have really good trainers and really good strength coaches. Like, if you do need anything, like, you're available to call them anything. There's workouts that they can set up for you. But I think it's in terms of what the Rays have done, like, we didn't have the trop open for like a pretty long time. I think it's just the last couple of weeks they've opened up, and it's like hour long windows and very kind of like safe, I guess, kind of like two guys can go in at a time for an hour. So my hesitation has just been like, I can do so much stuff here in Arizona. I'd rather do my own workouts and get in my own shape, I guess. And then once I have to go back, I'll be able to go back. But they've been really good about it recently. And they are just trying to be safe as possible and as responsible as possible. So I think having a bunch of people go in there, they just don't think it's really safe at this point. But like I said, we have so many good people to lean on to, like, if you do need a workout or something, that you can, I mean, you really do have everything. It's just your own personal work ethic and how hard you're willing to work on your own.
Tyler, how quickly do you think you can ramp back up? I mean, obviously the greatest challenge when the second spring training starts is going to be for starting pitchers to get back to a point where they're ready to take the ball for, you know, 5-6 innings.
I got 5 innings tomorrow. I'm ready to go. I've been throwing lives and like lifting and like staying in good shape and whatnot. So like for me personally, like I'm pretty much ready to go. I think it's obviously important to have like the 3 weeks just to get like the team feel back and see some live hitters and whatnot. But I think like on my own out in Arizona, it's such like a hot spot for professional baseball players. So it's so easy to just kind of get some people together and go to a park or go to a batting cage and just set up lives. So for me personally, like I'm ready to go. I'm looking forward to starting up here soon.
What have you missed the most? You know, just the day-to-day parts of baseball, you know, things that you really enjoy as being a ball player.
So much of it's like the team aspect and like all of your friends. Every day you kind of have like the banter every single day, and I haven't been used to not being around those guys for this long. Well, I'd say probably like the team aspect of it, like the camaraderie and everyone there. And our coaches are so cool and the players on our team are so cool that like, that's definitely what I miss the most. We're still able to stay in contact, but I'd say that's a big thing. And also too, just competing. I think I'm able to kind of get a little bit of that through like the lives and whatnot. And like, you can set your own personal goals and you can kind of hit some competition goals on your own. But so much of it is like, I've never had a summer off of like not competing. And I think so much of what athletes do every day is like, you just wish you could go back out there and beat somebody. So I hope it gets going.
So tell me, give me some examples of that, the competition goals, the training goals that you're using to push yourself on a daily basis.
So I guess it depends on like what I'm trying to achieve. But I guess if it's like I can have like a cardio day of where like maybe a little longer, but harder than you did the week prior. You can do like just live ABs. Like, I'm still, every time I take them out, I'm pretty competitive. As far if it's a bullpen, it's depending on how many strikes I throw, depending on like what goal that is. Like, I've been throwing to Cole Tucker and a couple of like the Pirate guys live, and Cole is like really talented and also very competitive. So when we do get up there, it kind of feels like a game. Like, I'm trying to do as well as I possibly can against him. So like I said, it's definitely not the same as it is in season, but like, you can hit any benchmark you need. Like, if you're lifting, if it's a certain amount of weight or like a certain way your body feels every day, like, you can just kind of like have these small little goals. And I think that's what's helped me stay sane through this entire thing.
Have you watched any of the games coming out of South Korea with no fans in the stands?
A little bit. Not a ton of like those games. I have a couple buddies over there, so it's nice to watch them pitch and then kind of support them. But as far as the no fans go, I'm it's not ideal, but I don't really think I'll care, I guess. Like, I'm just really want to go out and play baseball. And I think so much of it is like so much of what baseball is like your own internal drive. And like, you've always been like, it's competing against yourself. So for me, I know like the way my mind works, it's just going to be like, I want to compete with a guy who's in the batter's box. I don't think fans will necessarily have like dictate my effort level, but well, I mean, I don't know. I've never done it before. So I guess we'll find out.
Well, it's funny you say that, cause I've been trying to put myself in, you know, the shoes of you guys and say, okay, which guys, you know, might it be more difficult for which guy? And I keep on coming back to the short relievers, and maybe I'm wrong, but it always feels like the short relievers are the guys who are the big adrenaline guys with the music, and they open the gate and they take the run out to the mound and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I maybe I'm wrong with perception, but you know, as a starting pitcher, maybe you're not as reliant on that.
Yeah, I think so much is like, I'm probably more of an adrenaline pitcher than most starting pitchers. But I definitely think it depends on your personality. I think with a reliever, knowing that you're only going to go maybe like one or two innings, I think you're able to kind of like utilize your body as efficiently as possible for a short amount of time. And as a starter, I think it might be a little tougher with like going six or seven innings. Just maybe that adrenaline, like some guys kind of need that later on in the game. But I don't know. It's really going to be interesting to see, but I think for me personally, like, I'll be able to kind of just that, because you're still competing for the same thing. Like, you want to win. I know like fans add a little extra to it, but I'm out there in my own, like, I'm competing against myself really. And then like, you're out there wanting to win for your team to get into the playoffs and play. So I think so much of like the foundation of it will still be there. But I, yeah, like I said, I think it's just so much different for everybody. And I think too, it's like baseball, you kind of have to adapt. You got to learn, like, it's a 162 games isn't easy. So I think guys are in a good position to just be able to like, you know what, this is how it is. And you got to learn how to deal with it.
Now, I've been asked, you know, as we try to fill in the gap of no sports, been asked the question a bunch, you know, which teams do you think in a short season are going to be the most dangerous? And I always come back to depth. And I, you know, of course you mentioned the Yankees because they have a deep roster. They're a big market team. Yeah. They spend a lot of money. I talk about the Dodgers, and then I talk about, I feel like you guys are perhaps the most dangerous team because you finished up so strongly last year. I saw you in spring training, and the depth on your roster is remarkable. How do you feel?
Yeah. No, I 100% agree with you. I think obviously I'm biased. I play for the Rays, but like, I've had this conversation with a couple coaches, and I'm like, I would put us against anybody in a 50, 60, 70 game season. Like, I think we have youth on our side too, to where so much of it is like mentality based, to where so many guys are still so fresh, and like the big leagues is very much like, it's amazing. It's like, we get to go out and play in the busy field. No, not really many like 10, 12 year veterans. Not that I'm saying like, they're not going to try, but I just think so much of it's still like, we have so much to lose and we want to stay on the roster. And I just think like with the youth on our side and like how hungry everybody is, I think I'd put us up against anybody.
And I remember too, you know, the day after the Astros survived you in that division series, you know, talking with Jose Altuve and George Springer, and they were talking about, man, the Rays bullpen is so good. Oh my God, that bullpen is so good. And it feels like the bullpens are going to be especially important in a short season, maybe once some starting pitchers are taking, you know, 2-3 weeks to come back.
Yeah, for sure. I know a good amount of our relievers are actually in Florida right now throwing bullpens and whatnot. So they've been able to be like monitored, and so many of the guys just throw so hard. And like, even the bullpens, everyone's looked so good. And I've talked to Kyle a few times, and he's like, man, everyone is looking really good. So like I said, with the youth, I think that 3 weeks, especially for a reliever, is going to be enough time. I think depending on like how comfortable you feel as a starter, like it's going to be, depending on like how many innings you can build up to. But as far as relievers go on our staff, like they all work so hard and are like, have done so much stuff on their own. Like, we're probably going to be good there. I think the starters are the same way too. The Rays are kind of, baseball in general is trending towards shorter starting innings, obviously, like that. Like, I mean, last year when I came back, I started with 3 innings. So I don't think it'll be much different than that. So I think our team, I can only really like speak on our team. I think we're all going to be pretty good to go.
What's your personal level of concern about the coronavirus? And you've obviously seen the news about various hotspots popping up, maybe not in Arizona, Florida. How much are you monitoring that? How much do you think you'll dig into the questions of some of the health and safety protocols?
So I personally think, like, I'm not a health and safety expert by any means, but I know a couple people who have it, actually, like a good amount, baseball and not baseball. And every single person I've talked to is like not sick. that doesn't mean you could go out and do, like, you need to quarantine and, like, take the steps to not get anyone else sick. It's so concerning to be like, if you are around someone with pre-existing conditions, or you're around maybe someone who's a little older, like, it's important to stay away from those people. But I know around 7 people who haven't. Every single one of them is, like, around my age, and they, like, 5 of them are, like, asymptomatic, and the other 2 don't feel, like, bad at all, like, very small symptoms. That's not to say you shouldn't take it seriously. It's extremely serious. And but I think if you are kind of healthy and live your life, like, healthy, and you're doing a good job of quarantining and staying away from people, I don't know how, like, dangerous it would be. And I think, like, with the health and safety stuff about quarantining and how they're writing it into the rules, I think we would probably be pretty safe.
You tell me what you're looking forward to the most with that first start that you have.
Just to go back out and compete again. And I just think to be around all my teammates and just to get that feeling again, like, you kind of take it for granted. Maybe that's not the right word for it, but I think when you your whole life is around baseball and you have just such a structured schedule, everything gets taken away from you and you're at home. Like, it's nice to be able to spend time with family and stuff, but, like, I'm so used to competing. I just think it's going to be nice to just kind of go back to, like, the normalcy of playing baseball again.
Man, and I know there are a lot of fans who feel that way too, and just hoping for the normalcy of watching you guys. Tyler, thanks for doing this. I always enjoy talking with you.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen all across America, all around the world. Or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, how you doing this week?
Buster, it's another week. We're hanging in there. What can I say? I hope you and Taylor, I hope you're both well.
So on a day when we brought the listeners behind the curtain already a little bit, we'll do it again. This morning, you know, we were going to tape about 9 o'clock Eastern with Todd, but because I've got a TV appearance on Get Up following the KBO game, we're somewhat at the mercy of that game, assuming that it moved quickly. Well, as we tape this now... it's 18-8 in the bottom of the 6th inning. This game has gone on for about, it's a typical Red Sox-Yankee game, to put it in proper context. It's in the bottom of the 6th inning. And Todd, you had a great observation when you jumped on the line.
Yeah, Buster, I said, in a world that's just preposterous, you know, the fact that we are depending upon a game in Korea, the likes of which you just described, to dictate our schedule, it's just kind of perfect, right?
It's 2020, Todd.
Who could have imagined? If we had this conversation, I remember you and I, we got together sometime around the Super Bowl for breakfast.
Yeah.
You know? And I could have put a couple of bucks on the table and said, all right, Buster, I'm going to bet right now that there's going to be a time in the middle of June when you and I are going to tape the podcast and we're going to be entirely dependent upon the Doosan anyway.
Yeah, and they would have taken you away in a cart that I called, right?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Before we get to this week's quiz, let's talk about Wrigley Field. As you said in your pre-show notes to me, you're not even going to bother going back through the history because it's Wrigley Field.
Yeah, it is, Buster. And Wrigley Field's a perfect way to close out the National League. We're in the middle of the season here, quote-unquote season. And yeah, in thinking about Wrigley Field, it's such a familiar place. I think even to listeners who haven't been there, you know, they can close their eyes and envision the bricks and the ivy and all the steel and the buildings across Waveland Avenue. How about you, Buster? Give me some Buster memories of Wrigley.
You know, it's funny, and I don't know where this comes from. Maybe it was a particular day, but I remember the first time that I walked into Wrigley Field, I was kind of underwhelmed. And part of it was, and I don't know if it was because the field just looked damp to me that day, but it didn't look like a very fun place. And, you know, subsequently, it's interesting. Most of my connections with Wrigley Field have been with the ushers that I've gotten to know through the years. I'll circle back through and the stories they've told about being Cubs fans, about, you know, their fathers and mothers who are Cubs fans. And I remember specific stories of hearing from those people back in 2016 as they were closing in on that first World Series title since 1908. That's what sticks with me. I actually like the ballpark since they've made some of these modifications, Todd, more than I did before.
Oh my goodness, Buster. You like the giant video board that, as in the words of a lifelong Cubs fan slash friend said, Now it's Wrigley Stadium. It's no longer Wrigley Field.
I thinking more like along the foul lines. I wasn't by the end. I kind of wasn't a big fan of the bullpens down the foul lines. I like the fact that they put those underneath. I think that's a good thing. I don't know. I just over time I've grown to like it more. But the first time I walked into it, I was kind of like, wow, this is going to be, well, it's not so awesome. and maybe it's just my failure, but I didn't have that moment that everyone describes. It sounds like you did, though.
Well, half and half. My first visit to Wrigley Field took place in September 1987, back when I was doing baseball road trips with a couple of college buddies. And we would, we've talked about this before. Days before internet, we really had to plan these kind of things out. We'd rent a boat of a car in Jersey and drive to Chicago for a couple of baseball games and, drink some beers and, find a place to sleep, which really sounds stupid in our dotage now. But that's what we did. So my first visit to Wrigley Field took place in, 1987, a Wrigley Field without lights. So it was a very different place. The neighborhood was very different. I absolutely remember parking in a muddy parking lot. I have posted this picture on Twitter before. I'll do it again, where you could park for a couple of bucks. And we were driving this, giant Buick or something, and parking attendant, this old man, looks at our license plates and gets us into the spot and says, "Welcome, New Yorkers." And we sat in the bleachers that day. We watched the world champion New York Mets. How often do you say that? Not since then.
Yeah.
playing the Cubs, sat in the bleachers. Daryl Strawberry in front of us, Dwight Gooden on the mound. Howard Johnson hits a grand slam home run. It rained. We drank some old styles. But back then, Buster, the exterior of Wrigley, as a lot of people know, it was something that was, they renovated the place in the 60s and didn't do a great job. A lot of concrete on the exterior. It looks beautiful now. The restoration has been lovingly done. The neighborhood is quite different. One more thing for me, a very close friend of mine from high school days moved out to Chicago in the late 80s and lived in one of these typical, narrow apartments with a wooden, rickety wooden deck. And you had to walk through the drive-thru at McDonald's, okay? And literally his deck overlooked the marquee at Wrigley, and you could hear organ music. So I remember visiting and all that. But, what a place, what history. That and Fenway obviously stand out. The last of the jewel boxes, as they called them. So much history, so much, so much catharsis in 2016.
What about you, Taylor? Have you ever been there?
Yes, I've been in recent years. I've been twice. Haven't been to many baseball stadiums, but man, I love Chicago, first of all. Second favorite American city. It's just a phenomenal place. Shout out to the old Shevskis. And it's just awesome. I love Wrigleyville. Went for a bachelor party last summer, and we did one of the hang out on the rooftop of one of the buildings, out in the outfield. That was like a really cool, unique experience. It's an amazing place. I understand the hype. It's, one of those places that I've heard about forever. And I went and I was like, oh, I get it. Not like you, Buster. I got it immediately.
Okay. Well, as I say, I've grown to like it more and more through the years versus my first impression, back from 93, 94 when I was covering the Padres. All right, let's get to this week's quiz. What do you got for us, Todd?
All right, guys, here we go. This city has been home to a combined total of 4 different MLB franchises, National and American League, 4 combined franchises. Is it Milwaukee, Detroit, Boston, or Chicago? A combined 4 different MLB franchises have been in this city, Milwaukee, Detroit, Boston, or Chicago.
Taylor, what you got?
I'm leaning between Milwaukee and Chicago. I'll go Chicago. Staying on theme.
I'm going to go Boston, Todd.
You're both wrong.
Oh!
Man.
It is Milwaukee.
Damn it.
Who in 1878, and Buster covered them, the National League Milwaukee Grays played there. In 1901, the original American League Brewers. Then the Braves came along in the 50s, and of course the current Brewers, born in 1970. 4 major league franchises for the city of Milwaukee. Another good place.
Man, you know what? The Empire can't strike back unless the Empire starts getting some of these answers right. As you answered the question, I had the Boston pop right into mind, but I forgot about that old Oh, man. All right, Todd, thanks for doing this. And I got to say, I like that old Milwaukee ballpark when I covered there more than I do Wrigley Field.
Well, we're moving on to the American League next week, and I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. All right, Todd, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Friday. Glad we addressed that one off the top there. Got two Bleacher Tweets for you. First one up, Charlie B. at A Fish and His Chips. He says, hey, Buster, a question to take your mind off these Dr. Doom days. You know those late-night click buys, sometimes drink-induced, that you forget about? My framed Walter Johnson armpit just arrived and got me wondering, what are your favorite and oddest memorabilia that you have laying around the house?
Wow, I'm not a big memorabilia person, but I did get an autograph from Pee Wee Reese when I was 11 years old in a scorecard when I attended a playoff game between the Oakland Athletics and the Red Sox in 1975. So that one means a lot to me. And I kind of knew the importance of Pee Wee Reese in history when I was that age. But obviously, as I've gotten older and I've understood the relationship between him as a son of Kentucky with Jackie Robinson and helping Jackie to get comfortable in the major leagues, even more important having that one. But that one is the big one for me.
Last one for today, our guy Reggie Deal at Baseball Nerd 07. Reggie, I think this is an appropriate question to ask, and I have not heard your stance on this, so I'm curious. He writes, in Buster, with the very appropriate focus on social injustice and racist attitudes, this is a moment to ask, should the Indians and Braves change their names? Also, with all we have been through, is the Chop now dead in Atlanta? What do you think? I feel like if there was ever a time to do something like this, it would definitely be now.
Yeah, and I think the Indians certainly have been moving in that direction by, you know, no longer using the Chief Wahoo logo, no longer marketing that. And it's interesting. Last weekend, I read a review of a book, Taylor, about the Texas Rangers. And I mean, not the ball team, the history of the Texas Rangers. And I read that. And I forwarded to some people in baseball, like, there might be a conversation about the Texas Rangers.
Yikes.
Because that's pretty ugly, too. I would encourage everyone to go and read the review of the book. It was in the New York Times last weekend. The information in that was pretty stark. But, yeah, I do expect that everyone in baseball, as people are around the country, beginning to ask questions about some of these iconic images that have gone unquestioned through the years.
That's it for Bleacher Tweets, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Thanks for writing in, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Happy Father's Day, Buster.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I'm sure my kids will completely forget, which is okay, because they're the kids. That's it for today. My thanks to Todd, to Tyler, to Jesse, and to Taylor. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for listening. And remember, hatred and inequality based on race is something that we should fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.